In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, September 3rd, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The very last hour of In-depth before the Labor Day weekend. And thank you for listening if you're still at work. I'm sorry to hear that. If you're on your way out of town, thank you for listening as you go to enjoy the long weekend. And if you're not doing either one of those, I'm not sure why you're listening, but I'm glad you are. For this week's Federal News Countdown, every week at this time, two experts in the federal community choose the news stories they think are the three most important to the federal government. They rank them in order from three to number one, and then we count them down on the Federal News Countdown. My colleague Jason Miller is one of our experts this week. Thank you for doing this.
Always a pleasure.
Happy to have you in studio for an extended stay. And my other expert this week is the host of AmTower Off Center and one of the preeminent experts in business to government. It is Mark AmTower, also in studio with me this week. Nice to see you, AmTower.
Hey.
The countdown is loaded with good stories, which I didn't, honestly, I have to say, Jason, you and I were talking about this. I expected this would be a slow week. Yet there's still some pretty decent stuff going on.
You know, I'll tell you, as long as I've been doing this, I've never had a slow week in August. Everyone always says, oh, August, things slow down. There's always news. There's always stuff going on.
Yeah.
And especially end-of-the-year spending. I mean, it's not what one of the stories, but that's always keeps vendors just as busy.
All right. Without further ado, we'll start the countdown with...
Number three!
The third most important federal news story of the week, according to Jason Miller, is a federal news radio story with the headline, Feds to pay less for hotels in major cities in 2011. That's good news on the surface, but when you look down at it, it might not seem to the average Fed that it is good news.
I think it's a combination of things. It's a recognition that the economy has slowed down, which is not good news.
Mm-hmm.
It's a recognition that people are not traveling as much, so hotels are lowering their prices to deal with that supply-demand issue. And so there's a benefit for the government that they'll pay less for hotels in major cities. I mean, if you take Washington, D.C., for instance, now a lot of people, our listeners, are in D.C., so they're not necessarily going to travel to D.C., but their colleagues from other parts of the country will. And from March through June, which is considered high season around the D.C. area, it's $15 less, $211 a night on average. That's the per diem rate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, the way that the government does this is they have this really complicated algorithm, if you will. They take the number of revenues from the hotel, divide it by the number of rooms sold, and then minus 5%, and that's how you get your per diem rate.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's something about this though that I think is kind of weird. All right, I'm a geek for a website called Hotwire.com.
Right?
Are you familiar with Hotwire?
Sure.
It's the gig with Hotwire is you go on there, you specify where you want to go and how many stars you want the hotel to have. And it gives you prices. It does not identify the hotel, but it gives you the prices that are available. I took this list from your story just out of curiosity. I was able to find a three-star hotel a month from now in every single one of these areas.
Okay.
Every single city for less than the lowest per diem rate from the government. And I was able to stay there more than one night if I wanted to.
So here's the difference. So two things. You're looking at it from a month from now. Usually if you know that you're traveling in a month,
uh-huh,
you can always get a better rate.
Okay.
A lot of this is the last minute rate. It's like, hey Francis, I need you to go to
Manhattan tonight.
Yes.
Understood.
You're
going
to be paying a lot more money if you did that right now.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is GSA actually has a site called Fed Rooms,
mm-hmm,
and Fed Rooms, you can basically do the exact same thing as you just did with Hotwire. I mean, you say where you want to stay. They'll give you a list of hotels and the rates, and you choose the one that fits your needs the best.
Mm-hmm.
So they do use that. Unfortunately, Fed Rooms is not used very much by federal employees. You don't know it's not a good site, or people don't know about it, or some combination of the two. But, you know, the per diem thing, what I find interesting about per diem is that of all the traffic the General Services Administration gets on its website, GSA.gov, 51% of those going to the site go to per diem rates.
That's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And so you say on the surface, well, what's the big deal? This stuff's going down. The government saves money. But people have so much interest in this, and they want to know how much do I have to pay? What are my what's my meals going to cost me? What is my incidentals going to cost me? What about airline costs? And there's all per diem rates all around. The ones we're talking about are just for hotels and lodging. The meals and incidentals didn't change. Airlines are handled by the City of Paris program. And in fact, I learned something else. The car rentals, handled by the Defense Department.
Really?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. At least not at first blush. No, I'm not expecting you to justify it. I'm glad you're reporting on it. Jason Miller, story number 3 in the Federal News Countdown this week is headline, Feds to Pay Less for Hotels in Major Cities in 2011. You can, of course, find it at federalnewsradio.com. Mark Amtower, as usual, did not conform with the guidelines that were put out for the Federal News Countdown.
What a shock.
Yeah, I'm really surprised by that. But you did submit for story number 3, the third most important story this week, the midterm elections. What do the elections have to do with people working at agencies and trying to meet missions?
Well, number one, it's a very pervasive issue, so there's not a single story on it, but there's stories every day about the midterm elections. There's stories about apathy and voter discontent, and there are stories generated by people who create massive volume and, in Shakespearean terms, sound and fury indicative of nothing. But the upshot here is that with all of the discontent and the normal lack of involvement of voters, especially in midterms, if you have a loud minority of people who hate government or say they hate government and who know little about the operations of government coming in, you are going to be facing a true sea change potentially in how the government operates or doesn't operate in 2011.
What I have found interesting about this cycle is that in every case, no matter whether it's the person that people expected to win winning or whether it's the person that people expected to win losing, it has always been on the side of the person who's not particularly enamored of government. Alaska's an example of that. The Tea Party guy was Joe Miller, I believe is his name, who defeated Lisa Murkowski. we should be so lucky.
Yes, we should.
Who defeated Lisa Murkowski, the Rand Pauls of the world, and so on. Yeah. So the reason that I'm not sure that this is quite the big deal that it could potentially be is because we have yet to see any of these people actually elected to the seats. Now, a lot of them are on track to get elected. A lot of them are going to be hard to defeat, it appears, because of the makeups of some of these individual states and congressional districts.
Two things that I fear here. Number one, traditionally midterms, much lower turnout. Activists always have a higher turnout. Volume drives traffic, but volume is not, volume on an issue or a topic has never been indicative of depth of knowledge on an issue. So the volume driving people's fears about government or, you know, one of the hot issues right now, Obama as a Muslim. Excuse me. Let's see. Where was he raised and who was he raised by? He was raised largely by a farmer's wife, his grandmother, in Wichita, which, as we all know, is a hotbed of Islam.
What ultimately, though, does all of that, if anything, have to do?
This is fueling the fire for the volumes for people like Glenn Beck and even Sarah Palin. They're fostering all of these ideas about what Washington is and who's running Washington, and fueling the fears of people who really don't know that much about what's going on anyway.
What's the potential then for the fall if some of these people do get elected? What's this going to mean for the way the government operates?
Well, my fear is that it'll stop operating.
Well, it won't stop operating, but I wonder what congressional oversight will look like next January. I wonder especially in the Senate. People talk about how the House has the potential to switch, but I wonder, because the Senate is so much more easily gummed up, how easy it is to stop work there, no matter which side you're on, majority or minority.
Right, and no matter how small the minority is, coming up.
One person's all you need to bring the place to a halt.
Yep. So there's nothing specific about it. Everything in general about it is something that more people should pay attention to. And frankly, I would like a higher voter turnout than normal.
Mark Amtower, story number three on the Federal News Countdown this week is about the midterm elections and the potential impact they will have on the business of the federal government. You can find out more about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon, and we'll be digging into story number two from Amtower and from Federal News Radio's Jason Miller when the Federal News Countdown continues on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
I'm not just some tall drink of water, you know. I mean, I wash your dishes, I do the laundry, I help put out fires. I'm always there when you need me, 24/7, at home, at work, just about anywhere. And I'm not expensive, but I have great taste. Well, I guess I am a tall drink of water, but I'm tap water, and that makes me special. For more information about what only tap water delivers, visit drinktap.org.
Hey, this is Chris from Force 3. For a limited time, we're giving away $20 worth of iTunes apps downloads to the folks at federal agencies who are so busy making last-minute IT upgrades. It's just a way to say thanks for your hard work, and there's no purchase necessary. We just want you to remember that Force 3 has people working late to take your calls. We're on Soup 4, have a huge GSA schedule, and a wide variety of GWACs. You can make all your purchases with one call, then play Doodle Jump, fix your game on Golf Putt Pro, or check out the field guide to North American Owls. Owls rock. Call 800-391-0204 and speak to a live Force 3 representative. Go to force3.com now to get your free downloads before the offer ends. And it will end. Just as the world will end. Yep, I got the Nostradamus app. Force 3 is a Cisco Gold partner and one of the largest providers of Cisco products and solutions to the federal government. Cisco, transforming how government serves, protects, and defends.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arinc.
A Marine two-star general says the Taliban is experiencing a serious money problem after losing almost half of its annual revenue from the drug trade in the southern part of Afghanistan. Major General Richard Mills says intelligence reports indicate last year's poppy blight and government eradication are keeping the Taliban from buying weapons and other supplies. Mills said at a Pentagon news conference, however, U.S. troops still have a tough fight on their hands in Marja. I'm J.J. Green.
If you've ever stumbled in the dark, did you ever stop to think how difficult it is for our military to see what they need to see and nothing else during night warfare? Arinc has. Arinc provides design solutions for night vision devices, helmet-mounted displays, and laser eye protection, just to name a few. They help all branches of our armed forces to see better, fly and land faster, and most importantly, more safely. Arinc helps today's military forces become ready for tonight's warfare challenges. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
What's the buzz in the federal community? Chris Dorbeck knows it. Join Chris for his new show, The Dorbeck Insider, weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio AM. Chris has the insights on who's coming and who's going, new memos, new contracts, fun and helpful ways for federal managers to improve agency productivity while meeting mission goals. The Dorbeck Insider, building federal community by connecting people. Weekday afternoons on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome back to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, where two federal experts choose the three news stories they think are the most important to the federal government this week, rank them in order, and we count them down every Friday at 2 on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My experts this week are Mark Amtower and Federal News Radio's Jason Miller, and we're up to
number 2.
Second most important story of the week, according to Mark Amtower, is a WashTech story with the headline, Small Biz Definitions Put Hurt on Mid-Sized Contractors. This is something that I've been hearing in my industry chatter segments when I talk to leaders at companies of all different sizes on Thursdays at 1 on In-Depth. And that is that because of the way the economy is going and the way that the nature of government business is going, the mid-sized companies are getting squeezed from a number of different directions. The small companies are growing because they have the small business set-asides. The big companies are not getting the big projects that they used to, so they're kind of stepping down, if you will, and going after projects that 5 years ago or 10 years ago they might have just subcontracted one of the mid-sized companies on. Now they're doing it themselves. This is the same kind of trend that you're seeing, Mark?
It is, and the larger companies, you know, the government has an issue with the contracting workforce anyway. It's way too small for the amount of work that they have to do. So it's not a slam against them, but they're relying more on bundling contracts. And when you bundle a vehicle, it necessarily is going to be won by one of the big players.
Mm-hmm.
So the small players or the mid-sized players aren't even the first ones they think about partnering with, because it's a bundled contract. The contracting officer expects the large company to partner with a bunch of small companies to take care of their set-aside obligations. So the mid-sized companies are standing out there in the cold, you know, hoping for something to fall in their laps.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're really stuck in between a rock and a hard place, because when a big company has a big contract and they have some small business contracting goals they have to meet, it's part of their subcontracting plan,
mm-hmm.
they get no benefit from subcontracting to mid-tier,
right,
unless if that mid-tier company brings some really specialized skills that they cannot find anywhere else. And really the chance of that happening is not great, because most of the mid-tier companies actually are you know, they're nice-sized companies, whether they're 50 million or 150 million or 200
former
million.
Former small companies.
Say again?
Former small companies
have done very well. So chances are they have a wide variety of specialties, so there's not one specific niche that they're providing.
Mm-hmm.
This has been a problem for decades. And in fact, the one suggestion I heard a long time ago, which I thought was a tremendous suggestion, was to get rid of all small business set-asides and go and look at contracts by size of company, and that's how you do it. So you do no more 8A, no more hub zone, no more small disadvantaged business.
Oh, and can just picture those people going bananas, though.
So you have very small, you have small, you have medium, you have large, and you have very large. So an agency could say, well, we're just going to compete this among large, or going to compete this among medium. And you have dollar figures that are in between, you know, small is under a million, very small is 1 million to 5 million. You know, you could figure out any way.
Okay.
I thought that was a tremendous suggestion, because it takes away those issues, gets rid of people who don't like affirmative action. It takes care of that, but you're not taking out the small businesses who are trying to get started, who mm-hmm. get motivated, and you have goals based on these different categories based on this company size.
That sounds to me like something that might work. Do you think that would work, Amtower?
Well, it would, except now you're further overtaxing an already taxed contracting workforce, because you'll be adding more contracts, not fewer contracts, to the mix.
I would disagree, because if you get rid of the 8A, you get rid of the SDB, and I'm not advocating this, I just thought this was a really interesting idea, but if you get rid of 8A, Hub Zone, you're taking away five categories and you're replacing them with five categories. So it's really the same, and you have specific goals based on very small, small, medium, and large. I thought it was a tremendous idea that was during a time when people were very up in arms over both affirmative action and the fact that small businesses were getting not enough contracting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I did an interview a year or so ago with Brad Antel, and it was right after SI sold to Serco. And Brad and I went into some depth about how he had grown SI International from a relatively small company to a pretty significant player, $500 million. And, you know, the market forces for him forced him to go public earlier than he wanted, and forced him to sell the company earlier than he wanted. But I mean, they were growing both by M&A and organically, and doing a really, really good job. But you know, the market forces were such that they could not stay a mid-size anymore. They had to be, you know, adopted, if you will, by a larger firm, or they were going to stagnate.
And real quick, this really affects the government from a cost perspective, because if they're only doing large and small and there's not a lot of medium firms in that middle, it affects both the ability to hire people, the ability, you know, a large company like Lockheed Martin, Northrop, Raytheon, you pick the one. They look at, let's say, a $50 million deal and say, you know, that's probably not even worth our time by the time we go through all the rigmarole. But a big a company like, as you said, let's say, you know, Pragmatics, this story focuses on, or SI International before it got bought, that one you could argue, hey, that's a pretty good size contract for us, and it's probably too big for a small firm. So the government would lose some competition and lose some price points.
Is there a solution for this, given the infrastructure that we have in place and so on right now, Mark? Or is this how this is going to go?
Not in my brain. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people a lot smarter than me on this. I just think the story
A lot
needs,
of people are a lot smarter than you. But
yeah, pretty much everybody we know is smarter than me on this issue.
That's my personal opinion. Amtower story number two on the Federal News Countdown is from Washington Technology. Small biz definitions put the hurt on mid-sized contractors. And you can find that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Later this afternoon, Jason Miller's number two story of the week on the Federal News Countdown is next when we continue on In-Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.
Half-Price DC's Labor Day clearance sale is on now. Gift certificates that were already half-price are now up to 94% off face value. That's up to 94% off gift certificates to restaurants, spas, retail stores, and more, all with no shipping or processing fees. The Half-Price DC Labor Day clearance sale ends Sunday, September 12th, and supplies are limited. So buy your gift certificates today. Clearance sale prices up to 94% off face value. Only at halfpricedc.com.
My name is Abe Lincoln, and I've been thinking about this cool place that you can go. It's a website that I speak of called USA.gov. It's government information online, and that's mighty fine. USA.gov. Got questions on your log cabin? Housing answers, yeah, they have them. USA.gov is your official source. Get Social Security info, whatever that is. ID theft prevention tips, because that's your biz. Even change my address, and I don't mean the Gettysburg. Find government auctions, jobs, apply for student aid. Hey, I wouldn't lie, I'm Honest Abe. It's government made easy for the people. Take it from the dude in the stovepipe hat. USA.gov is where it's at. So don't wait 67 years to check it out. And that, my fellow Americans, is what I'm talking about.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown with Jason Miller and Mark Amtower, choosing the news stories they think are the three most important this week and counting them down in order. We are up to story number two from Jason Miller, and the headline is, what's the best place to work in the federal government? It's on federalnewsradio.com. And answer the question, please. What is the best place to work in the federal government, Jason?
Oh, once again, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the NRC. I mean,
what's the secret?
This is the secret?
Third year in a row.
I think we may have to find that out. I think... This survey, for being a slow August, as we commented at the beginning of the program, this is very meaningful, I think, to a lot of agencies. They take this really seriously.
Yeah.
I'm actually working on a story for Tuesday on the Federal Drive, where I talked to some of the top agencies. I talked to GSA, the FCC, and Smithsonian, and even talked to some agencies at the bottom, NARA, and they take this very seriously. They understand the employee morale issue, and when they're ranked high, it snowballs into so many other things. When they're ranked low, they start going, uh-oh, we really need to make a change. I mean, think of an agency like NARA, the National Archives Records Administration, do a pretty cool job. I mean, you know, they get to handle the Declaration of Independence sometimes. But it's not a good place to work, according to the survey, where the employees are not satisfied. So it makes them really look internally and go, okay, how can we make sure the employees are more satisfied? And I think that's important for every organization to do, whether you're an agency, a contractor, or even like us, a radio station.
Yeah.
And because if you get employees who are satisfied, they'll do a good job, you'll meet your mission more easily and more quickly, and all those other things will happen.
You're exactly right. These agencies really get in an uproar about the results of this. I got just the Federal Drive had Max Steyer from the partnership on the day this was released, Wednesday. And Wednesday, I guess midday or so, I got a in my inbox a press release from the National Archives talking about why the results of this and what they're doing to try. I mean, they were really not, I won't say it was a defensive tone, but it certainly was a we know and we're working on it kind of thing. And HUD the same thing. They really take this very seriously.
It's important for a lot of reasons. Many people, when they think about working for the government, figure, you know, oh God, white shirt, gray suit.
I'm just going to slug every day.
And, yeah. No, you know, I talked to Steve Ressler today. He'll be on my show Monday. And Steve's a former Fed. He runs GovLoop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of people in government who really come in to do really great things. And they do. You know, I've had, over the last 30 years, I've had a lot of friends in government that I just admire greatly. And, you know, the satisfaction that they get is largely predicated on the agency they work for. And if there's camaraderie and a good place to work, you see some excellent results.
Is it so hard to look at this list and say, okay, NRC, third year in a row, finished number one, and the GAO finished a close second, according to this story by Olivia Bronco? On federalnewsradio.com, FDIC, Smithsonian, NASA, as you mentioned, Jason, finishing out the top five. Transportation Department ranks 26, but they showed the biggest jump. They went up 15.8%. Is it that hard for the agencies who are not doing as well to say, we just want to copy what they're doing? I mean, why is it not transferable?
I think many times it is, but it's dependent on, from my research and this, again, the story I'm putting together for Tuesday, it's the leadership. The leadership's got to take really the bull by the horns and say, we are going to make a change. We are going to change the culture.
This matters.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And not only does it matter, but we're going to do stuff to show that it matters, and we're going to take steps to, because one of the things that I'm finding out is that communication. We say it all the time. It gets old after a while. But the agencies that are successful communicate with their employees well, make the employees feel like they're part of solving the problem. Whatever the problem is, they're part of solving it. And when I say problem, usually I mean more about agency mission versus, well, we have a problem of communication or a problem of this or problem of that.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of feeling like you're on the sidelines, you're not working towards a specific goal. And I don't think it's that hard. I don't think it is there's no secret key that you have to unlock, the Pandora's box of fun and how to manage your agency better. It's got to do it.
One quick thing here. NRC is also a very small agency,
mm-hmm.
so it's much easier to manage than a lot of the larger. So seeing an agency like Transportation really jump up, that's massive.
The part of this survey that fascinates me every year, I know a little bit about polling and statistics and surveying and so on, and if you have a survey that you do, you can pretty much count on the fact that if you get 1,000 responses, your survey's going to be pretty well done, that you're going to be pretty well on target. If you get 10,000, that's, you can say, well, these results are really good. There's 263,000 people responded to this survey.
That's 10% of the workforce.
Right.
So this data is absolutely, statistically speaking,
we can assume that all NRC people.
That's right.
But there's only like 30 of them. So,
but from a statistics science perspective, this thing's going to be the numbers here dead on.
Well, and that's why they take it so seriously. First, I got to say sorry to the NRC people. We know there's more than 30 people out there. But I think Mark has a very interesting point to go back to that we got some small agencies at the top: NRC, Smithsonian, FDIC. But then when you look at who's the fifth, NASA, they have one of the best missions in government.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I hear time and again from when I talk to people at NASA is, we love our mission.
Yeah.
We go to space. Well, we do flight. And that's a big part of the Smithsonian is the same thing.
Yeah. My son and I go to Goddard Space Flight Center to some of the visitor center activities, and you can see the people there.
Mm-hmm.
They love their work.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Space Camp Amtower?
No.
I'm just trying to picture you with the full on and the helmet and the whole deal.
I have
deal.
A fear heights anyway.
Do you remember when Homer Simpson went to space?
Yes, I do. That's exactly what it would look like, isn't it?
Not that you're Homer Simpson.
Thanks guys.
Yeah, I mean, not exactly. Jason Miller, story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week. What's the best place to work in the federal government? You can find that at federalnewsradio.com. And because it's not only on the countdown this week, it is a Federal News Radio story, and as written by Olivia Bronco. What's the best place to work in federal government? We have knocked out Jason Miller's story number two and MTower's story number two. That means we're ready to check out story number one from each of them when we continue with the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
How do you keep your infrastructure safe without limiting your people and productivity? CA Technologies let you control every use of every IT asset by everyone who accesses your systems. Can you say yes to new capabilities? Can you enforce defense in detail, not just defense in depth? Can you empower your people while protecting your systems? With CA Technologies, you can. To learn how, visit ca.com/security.
Here's Richard Bowe, Information Technology Director at FAA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Building Government's Future Infrastructure, sponsored by Riverbed Technology.
I do see a lot of managed services, cloud outsourcing. I see kind of a convergence between the NAS, the National Airspace, and all the supporting information that supports it, so that the data needed to do air traffic operations is available everywhere on demand by anybody who's authorized to see it.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
How do you consolidate IT without compromising performance? Make it happen with Riverbed. With our WAN optimization solutions, you can virtualize your government data center with ease. Plug and play in as little as 15 minutes. Cut IT costs up to 30%. Accelerate agency applications up to 100 times and keep data safe and secure. Learn more and download a free white paper at riverbed.com/virtualization. Riverbed. Think fast.
Which agency has the best transportation or parking options? The nominations are in. Now it's your turn to vote as part of Federal News Radio's Best of the Federal Government series. Will it be the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, NASA, the Defense Department, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, or the National Institutes of Health? Vote as many times as you'd like at federalnewsradio.com. Search for Best Of. Voting continues through Friday, September 3rd.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown involves two federal experts choosing the news stories they think are the three most important federal news stories of the week, ranking them in order from number three all the way to number one, and then coming into the studio with me every Friday at 2 and counting them down live and in person on the Federal News Countdown. My experts this week are Mark Amtower and
Let's go to federaldirect.net.
And also, you can hear him on Amtower Off-Center, which airs on Monday at noon on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And his counterpart on the Federal News Countdown this week is executive editor at Federal News Radio, Jason Miller. And you have been covering the federal government since the Paleolithic era, I believe.
I'm not as old as Amtower.
Well, nobody is. I mean,
somebody is.
Amtower...
Even Causey.
The Amtower is actually older than dot matrix printers. and so that is an indication of what we're dealing with here. But
I kind of miss the dot matrix.
Dual floppy computers.
Yeah, exactly. With the big 8-inch floppies. Remember those? I sold those.
My graduate thesis is on an 8-inch disc somewhere.
One of my first jobs out of high school was working at Radio Shack, and so I sold those old TRS-80s with the big 8-inch floppies. Exactly right.
They were actually quite good.
Enough technology reminiscing, and on with...
Number one!
The top story of the week, as selected by Federal News Radio's Jason Miller, is headlined, HP settles whistleblower lawsuit for $55 million. My first question about this story is, do you know who it is that wrote the story, the guy who wrote this? I don't know him.
If I'm reading this correctly, it's Jason Miller.
Uh-huh. What a coincidence. That's interesting, isn't it, Amtower?
It's amazing that all of his stories came off Federal News Radio.
Well, that doesn't surprise me one bit, but I find it interesting that the number one story of the week... Thank you. I appreciate that.
But
the number one story of the week as selected by Jason Miller was written by Jason Miller.
But funny, you forget the point that actually I gave you two number one stories, and the number one story, the topic was contracting.
Uh-huh.
And this was one piece of that story. The other one was written by... I think it was about the SBA goals, and we interviewed Joe Jordan, and so that was another story from the website. So I will defend myself. The fact that
I'll bring up the SBA goals related to mine. How's that?
There you go.
You're starting to sweat, so your defense is obviously not working.
You put the spotlight on.
HP settles whistleblower lawsuit for $55 million. This is not chump change. This is a lot of money, even for a company like HP. Yeah, really.
So a couple of things I think are going on. What we're seeing here, and the reason why I picked kind of two stories for my number one story, the HP whistleblower lawsuit as well as the SBA goals, is there's a real focus on contracting, and I'm not sure this focus is as beneficial as it maybe could be. There's a lot of scrutiny going on over contractors. This whistleblower lawsuit is yet another one that we're seeing going down the pike. In fact, the project on oversight of government, the project of POGO.
Project on government oversight.
Thank you. They actually filed an amicus brief with a case in court right now around another whistleblower lawsuit about this False Claims Act. And the point is, these are happening more. And I've talked to several lawyers who say this is the environment we're in, and every company can be victim of this because every company, because the regulation that this falls under, not the False Claims Act, but the fact that you have to give fair pricing, that your pricing has to be the lowest price possible. Companies have gotten so big, which goes back to our mid-tier company story earlier.
Sure.
And the fact is, sometimes the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing. So if you're giving certain customers 5 cents for a widget, and now you're only giving the government 6 cents for the widget, and the government finds out, well, you could be in some serious trouble. And that's what's happening here, not only with HP, but with IBM, with PricewaterhouseCooper, with Oracle, with EMC, with Network Appliance. And Oracle's facing this again. Oracle could be facing a huge fine.
Amtower, are these companies, you think, doing this on purpose, or are they just screwing up because they're so big and they're so diversified, or what's going on here?
In many instances, they're not screwing up at all. In many instances, government lawyers are rewriting the rules of conduct or misinterpreting normal business practices for what they perceive to be unethical behavior.
Mm-hmm.
This is crap.
Is this changing the rules in the middle of the game? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And not only that, you're talking about lawyers who are like 23 years old trying to get a gold star by prosecuting one of these things, and they have no clue as to what the negotiations were for the original contract to begin with.
What's the benefit to the government then? At what point are some of these companies going to say, you know what, I'm not going to bid on this stuff because now it's gotten to the point where it's not worth it? Or is it worth it because
they're
even when it gets $55 million?
They're not going to get it because $55 million for HP is 55 cents for the average person.
Yeah.
And while it sounds like it's a big deal, HP is a multi-billion-dollar company, and the money they're getting from the government in terms of sales is in the billions as well, or hundreds of millions, and it doesn't weigh out. What they're trying to do here is set some precedent and really say, we are going to go after you if you lie to us.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I've learned in all my years of covering government is if you do something wrong, admit it. If you lie to the government, they'll come down much harder on you than if you fight back. So the government's saying, stop lying to us or stop trying to play these games. And I'll disagree with Mark a little bit. I think that the vendors are not necessarily doing this on purpose, but I think they're doing this without it's a lack of communication, lack of coordination among the vendors who are saying, you know, the commercial side is selling this, but the government side is selling that, and
mm-hmm.
We don't have the communication. I think that's a bigger deal. But I agree with you, Mark, that this is a big problem, and this is a growing problem. And when you pop over to the SBA's recent scorecard on small business contracting, once again, they've missed every single goal except for small disadvantaged businesses, which also includes the 8A program. Yet they still talk about how the small businesses are the engine that runs the economy and how important it is, and 99% of all new jobs come from small businesses, yet they can't get a 23% goal across the government when, you know, they haven't gotten a 23% goal in years.
I guess the good news is, as I look at this chart, it does appear that in 2009, across the board, at least I'm through the primes so far, that they've gone up. They've gotten closer to the goals that they're trying to hit.
Well, it depends on how you define small and whether or not you're grandfathering in companies that have not been small for X number of years or not, too. This is a shell game.
Why do you say that?
Because a lot of the small business claims here, the businesses that are claiming to be small, bidding on small, are not and haven't been for several years.
So why don't they get kicked out?
The famous example is GTSI.
Good question. Yeah.
The famous example is GTSI. A number of years ago, they were considered small in several categories. And the reason why is because they were bidding on contracts in employee-based categories, not dollar amount. Mm-hmm. So a small business in certain employee-based categories may say,
telecom,
well,
1,500 employees.
So GTSI, for instance, may have 700 employees. So they're considered small.
They won ITES.
Right.
Predicated on telecom.
Right. Now, are they small? No one would consider them a small business.
Right. Or are they telecom?
Well, that's a whole different thing. So I think that's where people are seeing this. And that's where I think Mark kind of plays is saying this is a shell game.
I see.
I would make the argument that yes, things have gotten better, but things always seem to get a little better. They move the needle a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? At what point do you say, you know, enough? And really someone's in Congress has got to care and start having hearings and making this a bigger deal, or some administration's got to do it.
What are the odds of that happening?
Zero.
Really?
Yeah.
Because nobody cares?
Well, no, because
in Congress,
even
at least,
if they hold hearings, and hearings will be held because they're always held,
uh-huh,
will anything substantive be resolved? No. Why? Because historically, it never has.
Federal News Radio's Jason Miller choosing this story as his number one news story of the week. HP settles whistleblower lawsuit for $55 million. And in this case, Jason Miller, not only the selector of the story, but the writer of the story at federalnewsradio.com. Story number one on the Federal News Countdown for Mark Amtower is up next as we wrap up today's Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
Government and industry share information on cybersecurity voluntarily. Will that partnering relationship change? Well, it depends. Here's Dave Powner, Director of Information Technology Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office.
We're on a course to pursue the voluntary arrangement. You know, right now I think there's some good progress with the voluntary partnership, but the bottom line is we're not meeting each other's expectations. So that's going to be a tough policy call for any administration moving forward.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Eric.
A Marine two-star general says the Taliban is experiencing a serious money problem after losing almost half of its annual revenue from the drug trade in the southern part of Afghanistan. Major General Richard Mills says intelligence reports indicate last year's poppy blight and government eradication are keeping the Taliban from buying weapons and other supplies. Mills said at a Pentagon news conference, however, U.S. troops still have a tough fight on their hands in Marja. I'm J.J. Green.
If you've ever stumbled in the dark, did you ever stop to think how difficult it is for our military to see what they need to see and nothing else during night warfare? Airink has. Airink provides design solutions for night vision devices, helmet-mounted displays, and laser eye protection, just to name a few. They help all branches of our armed forces to see better, fly and land faster, and most importantly, more safely. Airink helps today's military forces become ready for tonight's warfare challenges. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Department of Homeland Security CIO Richard Spires will discuss the department's $6.4 billion IT investment and a status update on major contracts within the department at a breakfast event hosted by INPUT, the Authority on Government Business, on October 5th at the Ritz-Carlton in McLean, Virginia. John Sly, principal analyst for INPUT, will also identify major technology investments within the department. To register, go to dhsbreakfast.input.com or call INPUT events at 703-707-3698.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are counting down the top three news stories of the week, the most important news stories as selected by Jason Miller and Mark Amtower this week. And the number one story of the week, according to Amtower, is from GovExec. The headline is GSA Chief Pushes Agency to Up Its Acquisition Game. And it talks about Martha Johnson working over the team at GSA in a very positive way, just to increase the way that they service their customers. This is what Martha Johnson has been talking about, though, since she took office,
right,
collaborating with the contracting community, the vendor community, and really understanding the needs of the customer.
Right. And it's important for a number of reasons. Number one, you know, GSA schedules falls under this. A number of the other government-wide contracts fall under this. It's not dissimilar from what Loretta Doan said when she went in, but Loretta was saying things that I considered silly, like, you know, GSA should be managing soup. Well, no, that's like putting a kindergarten in charge of NASA. Thanks anyway, but no, because SUP has been and remains one of the best-run contracts since its inception, what, 92, 93?
Well, they're up to SUP 4 and pushing to SUP 5, so it's been a while.
Joanne runs a hell of a vehicle. You know, it's great stuff, but, you know, you look at the GSA schedules. Most popular government vehicle accounts for 2/3 of the transactions, but less than 10% of the spend.
What's that? Why? Why is that?
Well, it's designed to be, you know, low end, you know, COTS, you know, ask Larry Allen. This is commercial off the shelf stuff. That's the name of his show.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about GSA stuff. It's commercial off the shelf. The big items are elsewhere.
Well, it's quick buys. It's hey, I need a couple of desktop computers real quick. I need some services to help me do something. It's not meant to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on. You see that either through other contracts or through that full and open competition.
All right. You mentioned in this story, this story mentions networks. Jason, you've covered networks extensively since they first started talking about doing it. If networks comes off the way that GSA anticipates it coming off, if the amount of business goes through that people expect to go through it, will that kind of put the shine back on the Apple at GSA, do you think?
It's not a matter of the business going through it because it's got to go through it.
Right, but
there's,
I mean,
no
if
choice.
It's handled well through that contract.
It will. That's the key.
Yeah, I think so. I was going to say, it will help GSA's reputation throughout government a lot better. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is GSA is pushing, they're offering everything. They're saying, whatever you need to do, we'll do this for you for networks, yet agencies are still, well, you know, we're moving to it. It's not so it's not the priority that it needs to be, and GSA is doing everything again to push it, and I think that's helping them as well, basically saying, whatever you need, we'll do for you. Just let us know because we got to get this done.
At what point, Mark, are people going to start saying, since I'm not doing business with GSA, why is GSA in that part of the business? You said during the break, GSA, you know, obviously handles real estate, and that's a totally separate thing. At what point do we not need GSA to do contracting anymore?
Well, I don't know that will ever happen because technically it's part of their mission. But I think what Martha's pushing here is it has to get better, mm-hmm. and it should get better, but it should never be a sole source gig.
What has to happen for it to get better? What could they do, Mark, within the next 60 days at GSA to start to get agencies to get on board?
Well, 60 days is a little short in government time.
You can handle it, man. I know you can.
Training. It's all about training. It's all about customer service. It's all about meeting the expectations of the people in government. And GSA has fallen short often enough that many of the agencies simply do not trust them to manage their vehicles.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm going to take the opposite view of you there, Mark.
Go.
Not that they shouldn't do customer service, but I would say that on certain items, and really on most commodities,
mm-hmm.
and when I say commodities, I'm not just talking about pens and paper, but I'm talking about desktop computers, I'm talking about cell phones. I think GSA should be a sole source. I think it's a single source. And a lot of people will disagree and say, well, they can't do what they do, right? Why give them more responsibility? And I think part of that is a lack of resources. And not to say that GSA doesn't have enough people, it's the lack of people,
mm-hmm.
there's not enough of that, yeah. that want to work for the government to do acquisition. And I think that's the key. And I think Dan Gordon over at OFPP understands that. I think several other people in the Chief Acquisition Officers Council understand that the acquisition workforce needs to be not just trained better, but also more people with better degrees, smart people in there.
Let's go with Miller and step back one step then, one generation from this conversation, and talk about the acquisition workforce. Where do they go to find these people, and what should be on the resumes, or what degrees, college degrees, or whatever?
There should be a college degree program or a certification program offered now for acquisition in government.
But how do you get people to want to do it? How do you get people to want to become an acquisition professional?
Well, look at the workforce.
Because it ain't the sexiest thing in the world.
It's not the sexiest thing right in the world, but right now we're looking at 10% unemployment. Hello. There's probably a lot of people out there who'd be qualified to do this kind of stuff, and if they're certified, I don't know how quickly you can read the FAR, or if it's one of those things where you put it on CDs and then sleep through it for 90 years.
Get it imprinted into your subconscious.
Here's the thing. Jim Williams, who used to be at the Federal Acquisition Service, the commissioner, would say, people don't realize that, they think acquisition, you're buying stuff. You know, you're managing huge programs that have a major effect on the not just the government, but the world. I mean, look, Jim Williams managed USA Visit for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge program, and that's the type of thing that you build up toward.
Amtower story number one on the Federal News Countdown this week is headline, GSA Chief Pushes Agency to Up Its Acquisition Game. And we didn't even have a chance to get to everything, did we, Mark?
No. I wanted to jump on Schedule 75, and maybe we can do something next week.
Maybe so. The Federal News Countdown can be found, of course, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Thanks to Jason Miller for being on the countdown this week. Thanks to Mark Amtower. Appreciate both of you spending time looking at these stories and the nice handshake to end it as though it were some kind of arm wrestling match or something like that. Thank you, gents, both for being here. The Dorbeck Insider is off today, so it's the best of the Dorbeck Insider next hour and all the way up till 7 o'clock tonight on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm off on Labor Day, and I'm back with a brand new In-Depth with Francis Rose Tuesday at 1 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.